really need to highlight that we're seeing inequity in vaccine delivery, and we need to address that so that everybody has the opportunity to be protected and live a healthy life.
Welcome to Contagion Community, the new podcast from Contagion Live, where we talk with experts about the most pressing issues in healthcare inequity. I'm Nina, and today we're interviewing Dr. Leonard Friedland, a vaccine research scientist at GSK, about vaccination disparities. The World Health Organization says that the global failure to share vaccines equitably is taking its toll on some of the world's poorest and most vulnerable people. This is exemplified by the COVID-19 pandemic. Certain communities and countries had underlying issues exacerbated by disproportionate infections and a lack of access to vaccines.
We're hearing during the Omicron pandemic, are people being hospitalized because of COVID, or is it, that COVID was underlying what was going on?
Dr. Friedland has seen firsthand how vaccines, when distributed equitably, have the power to save lives. If you're interested in this topic, be sure to stay tuned for the next episode of Contagion Community, where we talk vaccine disparities with Dr. Jacinda Abdul-Mutakabir, an assistant professor at the Loma Linda University School of Pharmacy.
So could you start by introducing yourself and sharing how you became interested in vaccines?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Nina, for inviting me to speak with you and your audience today. My name is Dr. Leonard Friedland. I'm a pediatrician in Philadelphia and a vaccine research scientist at GlaxoSmithKline. And how did I become interested in vaccines? It's a really great question. And I was thinking about this, and I'm going to sort of give two things that really got me interested in vaccines. So I'm a first-year pediatric resident at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in 1987. And in 1987, every week into our hospital, we would have two or three young children, especially under the age of two, who would come in with very high fevers, be very, very sick with either meningitis or sepsis. And it was caused by a bacteria called Haemophilus influenza type B. There were 20,000 cases every year in the United States, and of course, many, many more around the globe. The reason I bring this up is that in December of 1987, the FDA licensed the world's first conjugate vaccine for prevention of Haemophilus influenza type B. So it was a HIB conjugate vaccine. And within a matter of months, HIB disease was dramatically reduced. And within 1.5 to 2 years, the disease was virtually wiped out in the United States. Hmm. And it was a miracle. And it was through vaccination. So that was the first time I really saw what the power of vaccines could do to prevent something that was a devastating illness to so many families in the United States, and to see how within just a year and a half, this disease was completely changed in the United States. And it was through vaccination. And then if we fast forward a couple of years, I did my residency in pediatrics and my fellowship in pediatric emergency medicine. And I was a pediatric emergency medicine fellow in the winter of 1990. In 91, when there was a measles outbreak in Philadelphia, there were over 1,400 children who were impacted by the Philadelphia measles outbreak in 1990, 1991. They became sick with measles, and 9 children died in Philadelphia during that outbreak. That outbreak actually spanned from 1989 to 1991 across the United States, when there were more than 50,000 children, actually, I think it was 55,000 cases of measles during that outbreak, 11,000 measles hospitalizations, and 123 deaths across the United States. And this was a vaccine preventable disease. And we still had 123 people die of measles from 1989 to 1991. And I saw it personally in Philadelphia, where of those 9 deaths from measles, 2 occurred in our hospital. And I was actually on staff when those two children presented deadly ill to the emergency department. It was a horrible thing to see, and it was vaccine preventable. And the reason I bring this up is that, so I saw what a vaccine preventable disease was all about, but as we move forward there was some investigation that took place from the Centers for Disease Control after that outbreak in 1989, 1991 for measles. And the CDC found that more than half of the children who had measles had not been immunized, even though they had a primary care provider. They weren't immunized. And why was that? So when they look further, they found that during that measles outbreak, 89 to 91 here in the United States, racial and ethnic minority children were 16 times more likely than non-Hispanic white children to contract measles.
Wow.
So there was inequity involved. And actually, in response to that epidemic, the U.S. Congress enacted in 1993 the Vaccines for Children program, which is a federally funded program in the U.S. that provides no-cost vaccines to children who lack health insurance or otherwise could not afford vaccination. And so this is how I became interested in vaccination and being a vaccine research scientist, because I saw the power of vaccines to prevent vaccine-preventable diseases, and I saw what could happen when vaccines weren't administered to children. And then I started to see some action to address some of this. And it's especially important, you know, this time of year, as we celebrate, you know, the life and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. And that's, you know, so many quotes that everybody brings up, you know, around his life. But I think here's one quote that's really, really relevant to our discussion today. And so 55 years ago, he said, "Of all the forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane."
Wow. Wow. Well, that's really powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And like you said, these are horrible disparities that exist in the US, but also around the world. But I guess to start, the big question would be, how has COVID-19 impacted routine immunizations in the US?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. So we'll focus in on the U.S. and the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has been very impactful around routine immunization for the other vaccines that are recommended for people of all ages. And I don't think it will come as any surprise to the audience that when people are not going to their doctor, when they're not going to the pharmacy, especially as occurred in the beginning of the pandemic, when wellness visits declined, immunization rates declined as well for all of the recommended vaccines for children, teenagers, and adults. And it's been tremendously impactful. The impact of the pandemic on vaccination has been tremendous. I mean, for example, the pandemic has had an impact on adolescent and adult root immunization in the United States, noting a 66 to 86% drop in the early months of 2020. Compared to 2019, with rates of vaccination today still lower than pre-pandemic levels. It's been estimated that up to 37 million doses of teenager and adult vaccines have been missed during the course of the pandemic. And of course, there's been many millions of doses of pediatric vaccines that have also been missed during the pandemic. And so we need to get back to the pre-pandemic levels of immunization to address this problem. And in fact, we not only need to get back to where we were, but we need to exceed that to pick up all the doses that have been missed. So basically, the pandemic has had a tremendous impact on vaccination rates here in the United States and around the world because people have missed their vaccine doses and they haven't replaced or caught up to where we were in the past. And this could create all sorts of problems. And then, of course, there's the issues of disparity.
Right, right. Well, what about before the pandemic then? What vaccine disparities existed in the US?
That's a really important question and topic as well. So before the pandemic and continuing during the pandemic, inequity in vaccination across race and ethnicity here in the United States was apparent. Now, I mentioned earlier the Vaccines for Children program, which is a federally qualified program to provide vaccines at no cost to children who lack health insurance or otherwise can't afford the cost of vaccine. Now, that's just for children. So that program applies for people under the age of 19. Now, the VFC program did significantly help close the vaccination rate gap between non-Hispanic whites and other racial groups. In fact, due to that program, the VFC program, there have been no racial or ethnic disparities in measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in the United States since 2005. And racial disparities for other vaccines have declined or become absent entirely depending upon the vaccination and the group studied. Overall, while immunization disparities still exist for newer vaccines such as hepatitis A, rotavirus, and human papillomavirus, that Vaccines for Children program effectively eliminated the immunization gap for other vaccines like measles, mumps, rubella, polio, and hepatitis B. But that's pediatrics. When we look to teenager and especially adult vaccination, we see gaps in equity. A recent study in the Journal of Health Equity, which utilized data from the CDC's National Immunization Survey, found that from 2009 to 2018, only 72% of infants 19 to 35 years of age in the US received all of the 7 recommended routine immunizations. And so that fell short of what we refer to as the Healthy People 2020 goal, where we'd like to see that 90% of children had received all of those 7 recommended vaccines. So we saw drops in immunization. And there, when they looked at disparities, they noted disparities by race and income, finding disparities in vaccination completion between non-Hispanic whites and non-Hispanic blacks, and a 30% lower completion rates from families below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. And disparities in health insurance also exist. CDC's National Child Immunization Survey finds that nearly 13% difference in those 7 vaccine coverage between public and privately insured infants. And so vaccination equity, inequality and inequity existed before the pandemic, and it's only continued during the pandemic. In fact, I read earlier today, if we look past vaccines, they've even now are reporting here in the United States, inequity in the use of monoclonal antibodies for treatment of COVID based on race and ethnicity. And so this problem existed before the pandemic and continues. And this is a really, really important issue because everybody deserves to have the prevention that can be provided by vaccination. This should be a social norm, and we don't want to see these inequities. And so just coming back to that Vaccines for Children program, it's been very effective for pediatric vaccines, but that program only applies up until age when the person turns 19 years of age. And for adults, we see continued race and ethnicity disparities in immunization and in healthcare at large, unfortunately.
And then how do these vaccine disparities differ globally from the US?
It's an issue. It's a global issue as well. I'll give you some examples. I mean, this is not an issue just for the United States. This is a global issue. You know, following high routine vaccination coverage during 2010 to 2019, after that, there's been a notable decline in global coverage for most vaccines from 2019 to 2020. It's been estimated by the CDC that 23 million children under the age of 1 did not receive basic vaccines, which is the highest number since 2009. And that's was reported in a recent MMWR report. So 23 million children around the world under the age of 1 haven't been receiving their basic vaccines. Global programs such as from the World Health Organization, the Global Alliance for Vaccine Initiative, and other national immunization programs, they do exist to support infant immunization, but disparities are widespread and vary greatly by country. And just for an example, an estimated 43% of newborns in 110 countries in 2019 received timely hepatitis B vaccine. That's a vaccine that's recommended within 24 hours of birth. In the WHO African region, despite 14 countries having adopted hepatitis B birth dose policies, coverage in that region is only 7%. World Health Organization, they've set global immunization goals and agenda, and their agenda for 2030 outlines a vision and a strategy to align global efforts to increase access to these life-saving vaccines. And so this is an issue that's seen all around the globe, not just in the United States, and it's something that is really, really important. And again, the pandemic has just exacerbated this issue. And we're really at a really important point right now where we need to make sure that we get back to pre-pandemic levels of vaccination all around the world and then catch up the missed doses that have occurred as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you touched on this a little bit, but what are some demographic or regional factors that can affect vaccine disparities?
You know, there are so many. You know, mm-hmm. I think things that the pandemic has really highlighted is the inequity that exists for providing healthcare here in the United States and around the world. We've seen the impact of social determinants of health on access to healthcare, delivery of healthcare, and we see that with vaccination, even though we have programs in place, this Vaccines for Children program for people under the age of 19, access to healthcare under the Affordable Care Act has increased the number of people in the United States who have access to health insurance. We have excellent programs with Medicaid here in the United States. And of course, we have the Medicare program for people over 65. We still see lack of access of healthcare for way too many people. And it's not consistent across the United States. Different states enact their Medicaid policies differently within Medicare Part D. So that's the health insurance program for people over the age of 65 here in the United States. For access to drugs and vaccines, there are often co-pays that can really limit the ability for people to access vaccines. I'll give you an example. There are a number of vaccines that require a copay under what's called the Medicare Part D program. These require copays for the vaccines for Tdap, which is your combined tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis vaccine, your shingles vaccine, as another vaccine that's in the Medicare Part D program. And if you have to make a choice between paying a copay to receive your pertussis vaccine or your shingles vaccine as an adult, or using that money to buy groceries or to pay your rent, we unfortunately, for too many people, they don't have the option to use the money for vaccination. They're going to use it for other things in their life, such as paying their rent and buying groceries, and that creates inequity. And it's going to be more common in parts of our country where people live, below the poverty line or have a less disposable income. And so these problems exist all across the United States, and we see it in the way that people access healthcare as well. Just because, people have Medicare doesn't mean that they can afford to access all of the opportunities that are available under that program, and the same with other programs as well. And so we see regional disparities, we see race and ethnicity impacting on the provision of wellness healthcare, and also vaccines are a big problem for that. I mean, if we look at adult vaccination in particular, just some examples. So the most recent Centers for Disease Control surveillance data of vaccination coverage for adults over the age of 19 in the US shows that few have received all of their age-appropriate vaccines, including influenza. And if we look deeper into that, we find that there are notable differences in routine vaccination uptake among racial groups here in the United States. So for example, during the 2020-2021 flu season, so last year's flu season, 55% coverage among non-Hispanic whites had received flu vaccine compared to 40% in non-Hispanic blacks. So greater rates of influenza vaccine by 15% more among non-Hispanic whites compared to non-Hispanic blacks. Among adults over the age of 60, where shingles vaccine is routinely recommended, only 22.8% of non-Hispanic whites have received the shingles vaccine, but that dropped to 8.8% for non-Hispanic blacks. And so what are we doing about this? As an example, just this past August, so just a few months ago, a vaccine advocacy group here in the United States called immunize.org, they issued a call to action to protect all adults from vaccine preventable disease and disability. So that's all adults from vaccine preventable disease and disability. And that was further supported by the Centers for Disease Control, which urged healthcare providers to prioritize adult vaccination during the pandemic. So things are happening, but we need to raise awareness. And that's why it's great that we're having this conversation today, because I said this earlier, but just to re-highlight, every person in the United States deserves the opportunity to be protected against vaccine preventable diseases. And we need to break down whatever barriers there are. And we need to focus in specifically on race and ethnicity, because we know barriers are pre-existing. Mm-hmm.
And then looking a little more broadly then on an interpersonal level, how do vaccine disparities affect society?
Yeah, absolutely. So the concept of herd immunity or population immunity is another way of saying the same thing, is that if we can get enough people protected, there'll be too few people to be spreading to those who haven't yet been vaccinated or can't be vaccinated. Now, the percentage of the population that needs to be vaccinated to provide that level of population immunity depends upon the actual infectious disease pathogen that we're looking to present. It depends on what's called the reproductive capacity of the virus. So for measles, which is very, very, very contagious, as is COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID, you need to get a higher level of the population immunized compared to a pathogen that's less contagious, say like hepatitis A. So, but the point here is that you need to have a certain level, it's usually a pretty high level, of the population immunized. But even if you can get, you know, 80% of the population or 90% of the population immunized against measles, for example, the number for measles is upwards of 90% of the population needs to be immunized to get that level of population immunity or population protection. If you can even get it that high, it's not going to be the same all across the United States. And so if there are pockets in the United States where immunization levels are lower, in areas where there are higher groups of people who represent certain underrepresented people in our population. So let's say higher levels of African-American people live in certain groups. If their immunization rates are lower than the general population, then there'll be more opportunity for the disease to spread in that community and to not achieve population or herd immunity. And so the point here is that if we have pockets in our United States or groups of individuals who have lower rates of immunization, so if African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, if their immunization rates are lower, where there are greater numbers of people of that community living, it will be much more difficult to achieve that population immunity. And so it's not just the number, that percentage of the population that needs to be immunized. We need to do it all across the United States so we don't have pockets of or zip codes or parts of our population across the U.S. that have lower rates of vaccination. We need to raise the rates consistently in every zip code across the United States so we could achieve that level of population immunity. And that's an extremely difficult thing to do if we have inequity, because the where we see inequality and inequity in vaccination and in healthcare in general, it's unfortunately, it's all across the United States in our inner cities and in other areas where certain groups of individuals live. And so that's why we need to, among other reasons, raise the rates of immunization consistently across everybody in the United States so that everybody can benefit and we can achieve, when it's possible, that level of population immunity. But, you know, there are other things that are involved here. Here in the United States, we're extremely fortunate that we have a national immunization program. But, vaccines need to be not only recommended, they need to be covered by insurance. You know, a vaccine that sits on the shelf does absolutely nothing. A vaccine that sits, you know, in a doctor office's refrigerator or in the shelf of a pharmacy doesn't do anything for patients. It actually has to be given to patients. It needs to get into the arm. And so it's not vaccines that saves lives. It's vaccination that saves lives. And so these vaccines need to be covered and subsidized by the government, especially here in the United States and governments all around the world. We need to break down those barriers where there are co-pays that could impact the ability for somebody to follow through and go ahead and get vaccinated. We need to have vaccines available for everybody by their health insurance, whether it's public or private. But there are other issues too. We need to create opportunities where people can get to places where they can get vaccinated. So transportation is needed so that people can get to their vaccine appointments. You know, we need to make sure that based on people's employment status and their education level, that they have all the abilities to be able to get vaccinated. You know, there are issues we've spoken about race, but also an income. But we also need to focus in on trust of vaccines. And the issue around trust of vaccines is really important, is because the issue of trust in healthcare is something that's deep rooted in inequity and is one of the reasons that we have inequality in delivery of healthcare is trust in the healthcare environment. These are just a few things to name among many that exist that really need to be addressed to break down these disparities that we see in healthcare and as we see now pulling through, unfortunately, to vaccination.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for discussing not only the problem, but some potential solutions such as insurance coverage and transportation.
Yeah, thank you. There are other things too. I think, you know, if I could just list a few, I was just
of course
thinking about, you know, what can we do to address this? So the list is long and it's not simple. I mean, it's not going to be solved overnight. It's something that as a society, we really need to focus in on. And feel that it's important, really important that everybody have access to healthcare, which includes vaccination. So, you know, we need to encourage patients, people here in the United States, they need to talk to their healthcare professionals about how they can plan around vaccination and how they can think about prevention, ways to prevent illness and death, how this is really important, not only for them, but you know, for their community and for the public at large. We need to continue to encourage the Centers for Disease Control and other groups, advocacy groups, patient awareness groups to continue to do large scale awareness efforts that encourage people to get back and catch up on the immunizations that they missed during the pandemic. For pediatric programs and patients, we need to, continue highlighting, the tremendous importance of the Vaccines for Children program. But we also need to think about ways to have similar types of programs that can break down financial barriers to immunization of adults. You know, vaccines have a really high return on investment. They are almost always highly cost saving. Compared to diseases that would otherwise be, contracted and would need to be treated. So prevention especially through vaccination, is a proven effective and cost-effective modality. We need to, promote the importance of prevention rather than treatment. For example, here in the United States, the CDC has estimated that for vaccination of children born between 1994 and 2018, the U.S. has saved nearly $406 billion in direct medical costs. So vaccination is highly cost effective. And then just coming back globally, Nina, globally, this type of progress that we're starting to, that we've seen, it's going to require the will and the resources of governments and healthcare systems all around the world. Not only here in the U.S., but globally, we need to, as stated earlier, we need to remove the cost barriers, transportation barriers, and the other logistical barriers around vaccination. the only way we're going to focus in on this is, you know, the continued effort and really the will of governments to promote prevention, and then to look at what's happened during the pandemic and how it's highlighted the issues of inequity in healthcare and in vaccination, and look to reverse this trend.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Friedland, for sharing all of this with us today.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's a really, really important topic. And, you know, just coming back to where we started, I've seen what vaccines can do to prevent disease and how important it is to make sure that they're there. And the pandemic has just, again, really highlighted and reinforced, unfortunately, these issues. When we have inequity in healthcare delivery and access to healthcare, we see that vaccination rates have dropped for all people, but have been really highlighted across race and ethnic groups, and not only in the US, but around the world. And so we really need to, you know, continue to raise the awareness. And I really thank you for highlighting this to Contagion Live's audience, because we need to think about this as healthcare providers. We need to make sure that we're delivering healthcare to everybody and working our absolute hardest to make sure that it happens, because we really need to address this head on with will and with effort, promote the health of everybody in everywhere in the United States and around the world.
Thank you so much for listening to this first episode of Contagion Community. We want to hear from you, so please send any feedback or suggestions of which health equity topics you want to hear next time to me, Nina, at ncosden@mjhlifesciences.com. We'll see you next time.